so.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to www.transparency.help. This is a show about being transparent about stuff, and you know, hopefully on the air it's a lot safer for you to feel like you can be that way. But my name is Evinda Leppins, and I am delighted to be here with you. You are a form of accountability for me, believe it or not. And another amazing form, who's been a great form for me for many years now, is Steve. How was your weekend?
It was good. Of course, we all have these big expectations of Valentine's Day. And my wife was the first to say, oh, I didn't even get you a card. I said, well, that's good because I didn't get you one either. So and that's, I don't think that's a big day for us, you know,
right.
As a rule, you
yeah.
know. But we went to dinner. Someone gave us a $50 card for Olive Garden. And then we went and saw The Sniper.
Yeah, intense.
Which that was very, very intense. And there's Private Ryan had that effect on me. The Lone Survivor had that effect. And it is all night, just dreamed about.
Really?
That kind of stuff. Oh, my gosh. And it stays in my head.
Well, because
for
it's,
days.
It's very much about the psychological, emotional well-being of somebody, isn't it?
Well, it is. But I think of the cost these guys paid and the negative feedback this movie had from political upper echelon and the pushback he got, you know, from the general public about what are you friggin' out of your mind? We sent these guys over there and we're not celebrating anything. You know, we're not trying to celebrate pain. We're not celebrating killing people. The whole movie was about the cost to these guys' lives psychologically.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And literally the cost this man made, if recently you're aware, that he also was killed in line of duty of helping his fellow post traumatic stress disordered soldiers,
mm-hmm.
and one of those who had PTSD killed him and a friend at the
and
same time.
And that guy is currently
being prosecuted.
Uh-huh.
Yes, his case very publicized and doing that, especially in light of this movie, even though it wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just.
Yeah, I have heard a little bit, but see, now that kind of gives me a little bit more pieces of the puzzle, if you will. But, you know, PTSD. You know, we were actually just talking about it before we came on the air, and isn't it kind of, I don't want to say new, but I'm so glad that they're acknowledging it for our servicemen, because they never did up until how many years ago, would you say?
Well, it's an amazing phenomenon, and how we wouldn't have noticed this before, or we didn't take it as seriously, but
mm-hmm.
we have accelerated amounts of suicidal activity with soldiers
uh-huh.
on the field, coming home. An excessive number of broken marriages, and why would they not have ever cared before? Yes, that's a really great question. I mean, PTSD, they want to look at sort of like multiple personalities. I mean, the things are outrageous that these things really don't happen to people. They kind of make it up in their head. And how would one know? We have these kids, virtually kids.
Yeah, yeah.
In front of who knows what tomorrow is going to bring, who knows what the next second is going to bring. And who knows, 6 months before they go over there, they were going to In-N-Out and playing video games.
Yeah.
And now they're men giving their lives to their country. In a lot of ways, we're not even sure for what reason, much like Vietnam. And so, yes, we don't celebrate anything by that movie, The Sniper, but we are bringing a lot of attention to the validity of people's feelings.
Which is important.
About what the cost of war is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I think it's a positive, but it's not without pain. There's a lot.
Oh, my gosh, yes, it's huge.
Yeah, and so it kind of bugged you and stayed in your head for a while.
Yes. I just walk around. Of course, I have my son
right.
who serves and my son-in-law who serves. And, you know, it's sort of close to home. You know, and my son was over in Afghanistan working with the SEALs and the Rangers, actually, and mm-hmm. organizing their outings. And so he was around that all the time. You know, those guys wouldn't come home, you know, from their special ops, if you call it,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, it's a real thing for me, but I think it needs to be more real for the people that we take so much for granted.
Yeah.
At the cost of their lives, for the freedoms we are afforded.
So. You know, that's interesting. I didn't want, because Sniper just came out, correct?
Yes, it's been out about a month.
Oh, it's been out a month. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's,
because
but
then
it's so good, it's still on.
Yeah, that's good. We need to go see it. I've actually been a little thinking, oh, I don't want to go see it. It sounds heavy, but it sounds like I need to go see it. But then on the other side of the spectrum is that 50 Shades of Grey. And you said women are getting...
Well,
you said a good point before
well,
we went
yeah,
on the air.
This is amazing. You know, psychologically, you get all this feedback in my world from different sources.
Right.
And more than you want to know, but a lot of women, a lot of married women, curiously, you know, the phenomenon of running years ago had men who were the primary runners looking so down on their wives who were out of shape and they didn't care about themselves. And
that's
so,
flipped, hasn't it?
Well, it's flipped. Well, now we have 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
Whose wives are unhappy with their husbands who are not doing for them what this man who was not the husband is doing for this woman on the 50 Shades. You know, it's like, hey, where's the romance in our love? You know, I mean, I don't know. We look at 50 Shades as romance.
Yeah.
In fact, he even
love.
Declares, yeah, he says,
it's
I don't do, I'm not romantic. Yeah, it was interesting on the news. You know, they're giving you snapshots of the dialogue in the movie, and the man starts out with, I'm not romantic.
Yeah.
You know, and so whatever
and that's
this is
what
about.
She's searching for. And don't get me wrong, because I have not seen the movie. I don't plan on seeing the movie.
No, that's true. I have not either.
But I find it interesting, you know, just what the world is craving and what they deem, you know, love or lust. You know, it's like our pastor was talking about it on this Sunday. It's like, are you listening to a love song or a lust song? You know, just what is it that, how is it that we define love in the world?
Well, the flesh is alive and well.
Yeah, right? Very much.
And it's a multi-billion dollar industry, the whole pornographic process that we, and women are as involved. And of course, women make those.
Yeah.
But women are as equally frustrated in a lot of ways, and it's manifesting in those self-medicating ways. And one is sexuality. And, you know, they always say the affairs, and they want to know how many men are having one, but who are they having them with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the percentages are up on both sides, sadly.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, we go, you know, I'm in the trenches right now, the relationship trench, and just really relearning, you know, because this is our fourth class, and I'm still learning new stuff. It's exciting to me because you could never overlearn how to understand others.
The human condition.
Yeah, right? Oh, my gosh. So, you know, the need to understand how you were loved really, man, I just wish people could just catch on, you know. And then what's frustrating is people in the trenches, they're learning this, and yet classes that have gone by, they didn't catch it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we can only handle so much information at a time.
Yeah.
And we can only risk so much at a time. And so it's like reading scripture. You know, you read it for the first time almost. You can read it the same. You can read the same passage every day and learn something,
something
new
different,
from the same passage. So, yeah, it's just the way the mind works. Are we ready to hear it? And if so, are we ready to act on it? Or are we ready to acknowledge the reality of my history and the pain I had to go through and what my life was really like versus the story I tell? And so there's a lot to the process. It takes time to mature into.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that they don't want to see it. A lot of times they're not able
absolutely.
To. And
sure.
So I'm learning that. You know, God is just really stretching me in this whole area of ministry, and which leads us to we're on our third root, if you will, just kind of giving an overview, a frame of the root. And the two movies we talked about, man, are pure full of this next root, which is the root of despair. This one was such a neat route to write, actually. I experienced probably the least amount of oppression when I was writing this one.
Oh.
Yeah, just because I know who and what I put my hope in.
Mm-hmm.
But despair, I'm just going to give you the dictionary definition, first of all. And again, these are just so we can explain or kind of give you an overview so that you can see where this stuff comes from and how it is affecting you in your life, in the choices you make, and in the people that you are in relationship with. So despair is the complete loss or absence of hope, which I find interesting that despair, that, you know, the opposite is hope. What do you call that? Antonym? An antonym?
An antonym,
yeah. And it's also an unreasonable obsession about things of which you worry, as well as the outcome of those things you worry about. So isn't there a little bit of control in there? This is your definition. This has S-A by it. That is you. So, and I like that, but that helps us go a little bit deeper with this.
Yeah, I think there are certain personality, parts of personality, introverted people, for instance. Extroverts are better at expressing what they worry, and so they can talk your ear off in processing out loud what they worry. Introverted people don't do the same thing, and so they could set their whole day up, and it may never happen.
Mm-hmm.
So not only would it never happen, but they are already anticipating how it's going to happen.
Right.
And so it's a very, very tedious mindset
mm-hmm.
that people have to live in, which by itself then would, of course, this is despair, would be depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you were talking about in whom you believe, we believe. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we can't believe that God has any control,
yeah.
we could all be in despair. And so, and that's why we could say, well, what about the control of a war? And,
yeah.
and part of that is that we believe we're responsible for things to help the outcome that makes it less despairing.
Mm.
And so it does require men to give their lives. And we could say, well, that's depressing. Yes, that is depressing. But with the worthwhileness of the outcome, we have to look at the other side and say, well, there's no other answer in this case, or there's not as good an answer as maybe we're going to find. But yeah, that you think yourself into whatever, and of course, this is under worry, 90%+ of anything we ever worry.
Never happens.
Never happens,
mm-hmm.
and yet we can get ourselves on a consistent, almost cycle of the week, what we're going to do, we're going to go to work,
yeah.
and we automatically think the worst of the day, we think the worst of the outcome, and sadly, it takes a lot of energy for something that most likely will not happen the way you think.
And it, I mean, despair to me, I do, like I said, really like your definition, because when you are in that level of worry, it is an obsession.
Right.
Yeah, it is
it's consuming.
Yeah, very consuming. Okay, let me give you a few interesting facts about despair. Despair and all its forms is in the Bible only 4 times.
Huh.
Now, hope, on the other hand, is in there hundreds of times.
Wow.
But despair is only in there 4 times. Now, I have an acrostic for despair, and it's kind of heavy. I should probably type it in the chat room. So it's denying emotional support personally and internally regressing, meaning going backwards. In other words, you're staying in your head, right?
Well, as I said, when you're introverted by nature, you stay in your head. And you're not looking outside you
mm-hmm.
for any other input, because you would have to admit you're feeling what you do. That's a little tough to share with people that you're thinking so negatively.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of keep it in. And then you got to hope that the rest of your day proves you wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough if it's the daily cycle of existing, that it's the worst is sure to happen kind of mentality. And even though in the face that the worst didn't happen, you would think, okay, I need to get over this. But
you need help.
Yes.
And a lot of times if you're somebody who's, I mean, there's a lot of people raised in the church. You know, I was talking to a sweet girl just last week, actually, and you know, she said, I was born in the church. And I said, well, it doesn't make your relationship with Christ any deeper and your faith in him any stronger. You know, it doesn't.
Right.
It really, truly doesn't. In fact, I think it makes it harder for those people who are in the pockets of their parents and were, you know, pretty much carried to church.
Right.
But there are people that, you know, have a lot of anger towards God, or they have confusion about God. And so when life hits them, they have no life preserver. And so I can understand this route taking speed and being on steroids, if you will. I don't mean that literally, but the root itself just really growing and getting out of control for those people who do not know what they believe.
Well, what's sad about this is if once it becomes a kind of way of mental
processing.
Life,
uh-huh.
that you miss all the positive things. You can't really enjoy. It's almost like your taste buds are kind of burned out. So there's nothing salty. You know, everything's bland.
Mm.
Or negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether my mom was a despairing personality, anytime I would want to share something good or you know, she would just have to take another spin on it. Yes, but, you know, and I was doing marriage counseling from 10. Because,
from,
you know,
age 10, you mean?
Oh, my gosh, yes, from age 10. That's why, you know, it seemed natural. Somebody said I had to go into counseling. I didn't even know what that was, from Ohio. And I said, and you can make money, actually, talking about people with their marriages? And so, but yeah, my mom was just an eternal pessimist. Would never allow anything positive
to come in about my father.
Oh. Primarily about my father. Yeah, oh. She could not. And of course, she came from a father who beat her and her four siblings. And so trusting men, you know, just the whole history of things we need to look at. Where did I get that? And from where did I get that? So, yeah, it's a tough thing, but that's why in the roots process in this transform class, a lot of questions are asked about, reflect on, and these are the things we're in the future when we get done with these roots, the preliminary discussion of them. Then we're going to have assessments that you can take while we go back and revisit each one to see if they fit you and how you think about life. So
it's interesting, though, because, you know, knowing that about your mom, it really does come back to, you know, how you love is based on how you were loved. And
yes.
So how we... You know, learning how to love who we love is, I don't know, I cannot believe how revolutionizing it is and how freeing it is. And understanding a lot of things has been made it much easier for me to move past some things I was having difficulty with as far as my mom, you know, who's, you know, praise God, dancing up in heaven now. But, you know, she's somebody I didn't have a relationship with. But as I look back on, you know, the pain and the stuff I endured,
sure,
I can't help but now know, you know what, she did the best she could, you know. But she was very negative. You know, she was very, very pessimistic, if you will. So, okay, now the opposite of despair or the cure for despair is hope. So the interesting thing that the curriculum will walk us through is showing us, you know, the necessity of what is it that we put our hope in. And oftentimes, I think we can really veer towards the lane of despair when we are putting unrealistic expectations upon those we love, right?
Well, yes, but hope, and we would connect that to God, of course.
Right.
But if those that were significant in my life were constant messengers of or creators of a life that creates despair, then what would make me think, if I trusted God, that he would be any different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy for pastors in the pulpit or optimists versus pessimists wanting to somehow dismiss your despair or tell you that you're being ridiculous, and they use the word just and they follow it with whatever answer fits, right? Well, just don't think that, you know, just believe in God.
Yeah, please tell me how to feel.
And so that's as dismissing as anything, you know, that anybody could say, because there's a dismissal of the pain you're in, however you know how to talk about your pain.
Mm-hmm.
That has created you to be in this despair, which in some ways fits people who've had significant abuse in their history. So they stay despairing because they don't know how to handle someone wanting to love them. You know, they don't know how to handle being vulnerable to someone's care. And so it's just easier, more predictable, if you will. It's almost like a drug. You know, it's my self-medicating view. That I just stay here because I can't think my way out of this in any way, because any time I ever would have tried, then I would have been disappointed. And so I just stay in this zone of my mind.
And, you know, it's hard to comprehend. It's hard to understand. You know, there's a young girl, actually, 17 years old, and just wasn't allowed to be a kid, in a sense, in that I think when she was 8 or 9, mom and dad split up. And so mom has a lot of her stuff, and she did not know how to parent, and therefore she really didn't. This girl became her BFF, and she brought her in on all the details of the divorce.
Wow.
And they were all a church family, by the way, P.S., by the way. So a lot of disillusionment, if you will, about God.
Hmm.
And so now, you know, she's got a boyfriend who's an addict, and he's just soon getting out of rehab. And one day he called her, and she was in the class, and she missed the call, and she literally broke down and screamed, wailed in sobs.
Because she missed the call?
Because she missed the call. and I held her, and which was really hard for me because I'm the avoider, and it's hard for me to deal with other people's emotions like that. And I comforted her, and I said these words to her: if when someone in your life that you love has this kind of power over you, it is not healthy.
Exactly.
And so I'm hoping that was well said.
Sure.
And then becomes the issue of other mediums. Like now she's doing the Ouija board.
Oh my gosh.
And so what is it? And I'm just asking you straight out because I was like, I didn't show my shock, if you will. I just told her that's not something to play around with. It's very real. Just like there's good, there's bad. And I said, I know you struggle with a loving God and you don't know what that looks like. I said, but this kind of stuff is really dangerous. What is it? What else can I suggest?
Well, if we look at this in the process of any 12-step recovery program or a life awareness, that people have to come to the end of themselves to realize their need of God. In fact, that's one of my frames of, at the end of man is the beginning of God.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it take to come to the end of yourself? And of course, the scary part is how bad will that look when you finally get that deep and that depressed or that bad off, if you will. And yet that's what it takes. And it's easier to think we have control over. A Ouija board gives that illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the devil's not going to be disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
You know that the issue of spiritual warfare is another whole conversation. We're not on the air to have, but people don't necessarily believe in spiritual warfare. They don't believe that there is a power that's in charge of this earth. And so once you kind of open yourself up for the possibility of alternative sources, and a Ouija board is hugely an alternative to anything of God. So, and all it takes is a little bit to let in a lot of bad. And so the sad or scary part is, you know, what will that take?
So all it takes is a little bad to let in a lot of bad.
Yeah. You just need to crack for you. And you see, that's what started with Eve. And I think that also is with us as Christians. Eve was tempted by the devil with starting with, did God really say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we have doubt. And people read Scripture, and, you know, it says that Peter, interestingly, when Jesus called Peter, it said immediately.
He did.
Mm-hmm. He responded.
Yeah, immediately.
Now we, you know, we're kind of more educated today, and we're kind of, you know, a little more progressive, and we actually have pastors we can listen to 24/7, and so we have ideas and theories and philosophies and theologies that when we read Scripture, and let's say that we're praying for something that God lead us or God show us things, reveal something to us, and the minute he does, and the minute we say, well, okay, so the minute there's a hesitation at all, then the flesh is in the question. And so we as Christians generally do not respond so readily, you know, let not a man be double-minded. You know, James talks about if you ask for wisdom. But then when you ask for wisdom, are you going to act on it when you get it? Rather than, well, let me ask another opinion. No, let me get another input. And the minute we do that, we are not immediately trusting anything. But we are trying to mix and match views and thoughts with our own anxiety and hesitation to find how we can make sense of doing what God might ask. And, of course, it's sad because we miss the blessings of just obeying.
Yeah, just immediately obeying. Well, so I guess then, because I can tell this person has a lot of despair in her life, so basically it'd be just let her be and just love her from the sidelines and, you know, give her insight when, when she invites you in or whatever. But as a parent, I can see the mom is really full of despair on how to handle her daughter.
Sure.
And so it's not like she could go in there and yank it out of her room, right?
Sure. How old is she?
She's 17.
17, well, the mom could. I mean, it's my home, and a parent could draw the line that says, I have to answer to God for the things I allow in my home, and that's not one of the things, like X-rated movies. Like, I mean, you can go down the list of what I'm responsible as the parent to answer to God. You know, well, the daughter you gave me, you know, well, okay, great, but you still had a choice, and you made it by letting her do that.
Yes, yeah, so I can just see like the despair on both sides, and
sure.
it's crazy. I wanted to actually close with a cool little revelation about transform, and what we're trying to do is just incorporate just real life situations that are happening that we notice that really involve each of these roots as we bring them up, and so you know, that's why I bring real stuff into it, including my own. But the other day I was talking with somebody, we were talking about pets as children. And somebody was talking about how he did not like pets as children, and then this girl was talking about how she loved kitties, and so they were talking.
So we're talking about people that make their pets their children.
Well, no, they were just talking about pets, and
right.
And so they were talking. They were as children when they were kids growing up,
well,
having
pets as a child.
And I remember I had a cat. You know, cat, and then we just got talking about different coping mechanisms as children. And so I had like a memory, you know, come up, and it was powerful because it has to do with this curriculum.
Mm.
And I said, I really didn't have, I mean, I remember I had a kitty that I liked to call mine, but she really was the family kitty, but she kind of favored me. But then when she died and the fighting would start with my mom and my stepdad, I would go outside to the side yard and I had pet caterpillars.
Huh.
And I literally would pick them up and pet them, and I just, those were my pets. And I remember coming out one day, and they were gone.
Hmm.
Because they had transformed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, transform. It's like, oh, my gosh. So from a very early age, you know what I mean? Just that whole transform thing. That was kind of, it was kind of trippy. It was like, I said transform, and my friend that I was talking to about it went, oh, my God, transform. I went, oh, my gosh, that's like the name of the curriculum. That's, God uses all things in our life for all things.
Well, it's curious. You should mention animals during this despair discussion.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are much more safe with animals than humans.
I am.
And so we evolve in our connectivity
mm-hmm.
away from the human being.
Yep.
And, of course, it may translate to reacting to your child treating your pet a certain way, and then you yell at your child because you're more protective of your pet than your child.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really kind of weird how the phenomenon of, but let's be fair to the animal in terms of recovery, because they have a lot of equestrian treatment facilities for eating disordered people.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to use that for them to gain the strength the animal has. I mean, they translate it
awesome.
Into the things that we may feel we're missing in our human condition.
Yeah.
That the animal does not.
That's and very cool. You mean the horse?
Yeah, the horse. Yeah.
That is
they have
fabulous.
Horse therapy, if you want to call it horse therapy, but yeah.
I'm telling you, I learned a lot from my dogs.
Mm.
I have. I mean, those dogs are just very, very loving and.
Huh.
I have. I've learned about... They
keep coming back no matter how you treat them.
I'm telling you, they're so unconditional. It's
sure.
kind of amazing. Anyways, well, that is our show for today. Next week, we are going to be talking about a very interesting root called the root of rage. And I just want to leave you with this little symbolism. A pot on the stove, and you're just got all kinds of things being thrown into it. Eventually, it's going to overflow.
Hmm.
Yes, we will discuss rage and some ways that it has affected people, and we'll bring lots of examples to the table. In fact, that one might even take a couple of weeks. So, anyways, thanks so much for joining us today. Reach out and make it a great day.